This is the United Nations. From Lake Success, we present an authoritative account of significant international developments. The United Nations today.
In the next 15 minutes, you'll hear the story of what the United Nations proposes to do to help the underdeveloped countries of the world. You'll hear a brief report on the UN's activities in the field of narcotic drugs. And then we'll present a special interview with a young woman who will describe the work now being done to feed and clothe hungry, destitute children. First, here is the remarkable story just released of the United Nations plan to improve living conditions in the underdeveloped areas of the world.
Most of the people hearing this particular program live in the developed and industrial countries of the world. And often we tend to forget that by far the great majority of the people on this globe of ours live in countries which are underdeveloped. Underdeveloped, that's a sort of technical word. What it means is that people who live in those countries haven't got many of the daily things and services which we often regard as necessities. It's in terms like that that we can say that 2/3 of the world's people are living in poverty. The great majority of people in these countries don't have the reasonably well-balanced meals that we eat here. Their housing is often atrociously poor. Their lives are often limited in perspective. All because the economy of that country is, there's no escape from the word, underdeveloped. Now, it's only in the last few years that people have come to realize that the problem this sets to all the world's leaders is a problem which can best be solved through and within the United Nations. Individual countries could in many cases do very little without real international cooperation. And that brings us to today's news. It's stirring stuff, this, in its own way as dramatic as anything that's happened at Lake Success before. A new and vast UN plan has been drawn up in which all the social and economic forces of the United Nations have their part for real technical assistance to dozens of countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. This plan is going to do two things. It's going to increase production in both farm and industry. It's going to make people in those countries enormously better customers, able to afford imported goods they couldn't have bought before. And that means that not only these countries, but all the nations of the world are going to benefit. The key personalities behind the plan include the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Trygve Lie, and the President of the United States, President Truman. You may remember now the famous fourth point of President Truman's inaugural speech when he talked about a bold new program to help underdeveloped countries. Now here's what's going to be done. The new techniques of all the advanced industrial countries are going to be made available to the less fortunate nations to the extent they can be used. This will be achieved by sending the men with the know-how out to train local people. But the report says this: the patterns of the highly advanced countries can't just be mechanically applied. Development has to come through the efforts of people in the backward lands. Each of the UN's specialized agencies is going to tackle a particular part of the work. The UN itself is going to concentrate on oil production and mining, water resources, administration, and housing. FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, is going to be concerned with forestry and fishing, with new methods of farming and research into nutrition. UNESCO has been handed the job of helping put new thoughts into the scientific and educational minds of people in these countries. Air transport problems are going to be handled by ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization. ILO, the International Bank, the Refugee Organization, all have their set parts in this gigantic new plan. It's going to cost about $36 million for the first year, about $50 million for the second. What this means is that the nations have agreed that prosperity is impossible while poverty exists in some parts of the world. That economically speaking, at any rate, it is one world as far as the health and well-being of people is concerned.
While this United Nations plan to improve living conditions in the underdeveloped countries was being released to the world at Lake Success, a little-known group called the United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs was winding up its sessions. But what has been accomplished? Well, the commission prepared a list of recommendations of what it thought should be done about narcotics and synthetic drugs. What restrictions should exist as to their sale and use by the public? For example, the Narcotics Commission proposed that the use of opium should be limited to medical and scientific needs, and that the illicit traffic in drugs be curbed by the strengthening of laws that already exist. In addition, it is recommended that a small group be sent to Latin America to study scientifically the actual effects of chewing coca leaves.
Indonesia is about to receive a mission from the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF. Put another way, that means that the children of Indonesia are about to be helped by the United Nations. Milk and cod liver oil in great quantities will be used to strengthen the undernourished bodies. Dry whole milk in sufficient quantities to take care of 10,000 children for half a year can now be furnished. This is the first time that aid will be furnished the children of Indonesia. Meanwhile, however, seven countries in various parts of the world have heeded the plea of the United Nations General Assembly for continued aid to children and have launched campaigns for funds. Belgium, Canada, Ceylon, Honduras, Italy, Pakistan, and Switzerland have announced plans for their 1949 campaigns for the United Nations Appeal for Children. Switzerland, the first to get its campaign underway, has nearly completed its drive, and Canada, the second country to start its campaign, has just opened its appeal. Other campaigns, which are still in the organizational stage, will take place in Afghanistan, Australia, Czechoslovakia, the Dominican Republic, Greece, Luxembourg, and Yugoslavia. Some campaigns which were launched in 1948 are still in progress. These are continuing in Denmark, India, Iran, Peru, Thailand, and Uruguay. The total amount so far realized from the 1948 campaigns is $10.5 million, which has already brought aid and hope to millions of children in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. To give you an eyewitness account of what the United Nations Appeal for Children has been doing in various parts of the world, but especially in Australia, where the people contributed more money than in any other country of the world, this reporter spoke on Thursday to Mrs. H.J. Daly, who played a leading part in establishing this record. Mrs. Daly was the treasurer of the UNAC campaign in New South Wales. Here is the recorded interview. Mrs. Daly, just how much did Australians contribute to UNAC?
Well, I believe the latest figure reported is over $1,850,000, or roughly, £565,000.
Well, could you give us some idea how this compares with other countries' UNAC contributions?
Figuring it in the amount of dollar equivalents, the next two countries after Australia are New Zealand, the Union of South Africa, and the United Kingdom. The nearest country, New Zealand, has given the equivalent of $1,578,000.
Well, Mrs. Daly, I think it's particularly opportune that we get together on this program today in view of the announcement that has just recently been made of a third big contribution from your government to UNICEF. Would you care to comment on
yes,
that?
Yes, I would. While I've been here, I learnt that the government of Australia, as distinct from the UNAC campaign of the people, has just informed the fund of its intention to contribute £500,000, about $1,600,000. Mm-hmm. As you say, this is the third time that our government has come forward to aid the fund. This means that my country stands second in the list of government contributions. Of course, the first is the United States, for the U.S. Congress has appropriated $75 million. And every time other governments give $1, the fund can draw $2.57 from the U.S. contribution. This generosity of the United States must encourage other governments to continue their contributions.
Well, then, doesn't that mean that the new Australian government contribution is of double value to UNICEF? Not only does it mean that the fund can buy more supplies in Australia and benefit more children, but it also produces valuable additional dollars. Am I right in that?
Yes, Mr. Rose, you are. You know, I'm quite pleased with the role my country has played in UNICEF's operations. When you add the government and UNEC contributions together, it means that $1.38 has been given per person, a ratio beaten only by Iceland, Mozambique, and New Zealand. Since my arrival here, UNICEF officials have told me that the new government contribution will cover the cost of 1 month and a half of operations. This means that food, medical supplies, and raw materials for much-needed clothing will be distributed to millions of children during the perilous winter weather.
Now, I understand that this new gift from your country comes at a time when UNICEF is threatened with the possibility of closing down its operations. You suppose you could tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, it's true that a financial crisis may force the fund to abandon its worldwide fight against child hunger and disease. I've been reading in the New York papers that UNICEF has no money in sight to ensure minimum feeding and medical care being continued for the most urgent cases next winter. And furthermore, it is $22 million short of carrying out its programs to the end of this year.
Well, wouldn't this be disastrous for the children depending on the fund for assistance in getting through the winter?
Yes, it would certainly be very unfortunate. At the present moment, UNICEF is providing a daily supplementary meal for about 5 million children and mothers in Europe, the Middle East, and the Far East. This meal is of the simplest sort, milk and a piece of bread served with some meat or fish or perhaps noodles. But it's rich in vitamins and is of tremendous help in buoying up the children's health. For years, they've been living on a minimum diet, inadequately clothed, in unhealthy, overcrowded living quarters. It would be an undoubted blow to their recovery to lose this extra help just when the winter weather is upon them. I'm very pleased to learn this morning from UNICEF headquarters that Canada, well aware of this, has just started its next campaign to give them the help that they so badly need.
I understand that Australia is going to have another UNAC campaign this winter. I should think you would be of great help in telling the people of your country about the actual uses towards which their money will go.
Well, Mr. Rose, aside from my personal interest in seeing the children, we've all been working to help, I want to be able to get the answers to all the questions Australians ask about UNICEF.
Uh-huh.
I want to be able to give them a first-hand account of what their contributions of the past have accomplished. And even more important, I want to be able to tell them of the great needs that still exist. For I firmly believe that once they are given the facts, Australians will respond in the present crisis of the fund even more generously than they have in the past. Here in America, I have learned that a campaign is now being set up to raise funds through all the large organizations. The people I have talked to are hopeful that this year such a campaign will be a great deal more successful than was the United States UNAC campaign of last year. I know that Australia will certainly once more give generously, even if possible, to exceed the amount raised in the first campaign. In this manner, I am hopeful that encouragement can be given for the other contributing countries to do the same.
You have been listening to Mrs. H.J. Daly, Treasurer of the Campaign for the United Nations Appeal for Children in New South Wales. When the campaign comes to your country, may we ask you to remember the children.
The United Nations Today is heard daily from coast to coast in the United States on the Network for Peace, over the Dominion Network in Canada, and by shortwave to Australia, New Zealand, India, Pakistan, South Africa, and the Far East. The United Nations Today has come to you from Lake Success, New York.